My name is Gregory Mitchell, and I represent Mr. Lindell Blunt. Your Honors, essentially I would like to focus my argument this morning on the court's decision in Espinoza and essentially how this court interpreted how the safety valve should be applied by the court and evaluated by the government. Essentially, as this court stated in Ponce, that the burden of the defendant is pretty much to make a good faith attempt to cooperate with authorities and volunteer all relevant information he has concerning his offense. Our position is that the government has the same good faith requirement, that in fact if a defendant comes in and provides all of the information that he has concerning his involvement in the offense, the government has an obligation to apply good faith and essentially address those issues.
But what about the fact that he lied? He lied about the extent of his involvement in drug selling. He lied about the drug selling activities of his friends. He lied about the true nature of the Young Money Group, which was clearly more than some basketball team.
If I can, Justice Roebner, essentially, as I point out in my...
Just a judge.
Justice, I'm sorry.
No, I like it. But I'm just a judge.
What I tried to explain in my brief is to outline the very extensive government investigation that it began in 2006 in November. Three different Title IIIs, extensive undercover investigation, undercover buys, and the like. They clearly identified the involved players in the conspiracy that was under investigation, the drug distribution conspiracy. In every single case, for that year plus, this defendant was never identified as being involved. And what we have now at sentencing is a backdoor attempt to say you were involved because we have information that you knew so-and-so and that you lived close to here and you were possibly over here. Every single time that, in fact, the government's own evidence identified that it was not Mr. Blunt, that, in fact, their cooperating witnesses had identified other individuals, the government admitted that he was misidentified.
Look, even if we would disregard the police officer's testimony, why wouldn't Mr. Williams' testimony be enough to support the finding that Mr. Blount was not truthful in the information that he gave about the extent of his participation in the conspiracy?
Well, and in particular, Mr. Williams.
If I may finish.
Yeah, sure. Yes, sir.
Mr. Williams testified that Blount was handing out free samples of heroin, you know, at 65th and Maryland. I was wondering if you're trying to argue that handing out samples and selling are not the same thing.
Not at all. And this is what, again, I tried to outline in the brief. The main witness here for the government was the main person, Augay Williams. And he was the individual that the government relied upon when he first indicated that it was Mr. Blunt who was the person who had the weapon, that he had given Mr. Blount a gun, and these were the 302s and the DEA-6s that basically recorded complete misinformation that Mr. Augie Williams had provided. And in fact, when he finally was allowed to testify, he essentially indicated that, well, I knew him, but it wasn't what we said before. That was inaccurate, but I did work with him at another time, in another case, related to some pass outs because that was where the conflict occurred. And what my point being, Your Honor, is that essentially what the government did at the time that Mr. Blount came in and proffered was, we believe this is what your involvement was. Mr. Blount came in, he proffered in good faith and provided clearly the details of what his involvement was. And once he showed the government the inaccuracy of their own cooperating witnesses' testimony, the false statements that he had made, the clearly misidentification of Mr. Blount, then it shifted. It shifted for the sentencing hearing. And instead of the heroin at 7900 in Cottage Grove and that entire conspiracy to which the Title IIIs, the investigation, the undercover, the DA-6s, when all of that investigation was considered, at sentencing it began to shift now. And it shifted to 64th in Maryland for the first time that somehow that this conspiracy now involved drug dealing in a whole different location.
But it's not such a different location. It's a few blocks north of the other one, but... I don't know why, as a matter of fact, the district court couldn't credit Mr. Williams' statement that Mr. Blount was working with Mr. Johnson for the earlier phase before he started dealing more directly, and if he credited that information, then Mr. Blunt was lying.
Well, and the only explanation I can explain, Judge, is that this was a wide-ranging, multi-defendant charge that this particular district court had a lot of information on the vastness of this conspiracy. And in fact, notwithstanding hearing the cooperating witnesses and the sentencing hearings of all of these different individuals, not one, not even that was promised with Tavares Williams about the gun and the rest that the government had promised would present, did come in and link Mr. Blunt to this conspiracy. The only evidence that came in afterwards from this police officer that said, well, he was stopped several times in an area that we knew Larry Johnson, who was a drug dealer, who also dealt drugs. And Mr. Blunt testified, I've known him since grade school, but I never dealt any drugs with.
And Mr. Williams said to the contrary. So there's some evidence that Blunt was working with Johnson for a period of time, then it stopped, but for a period of time. And then, as Judge Rovner alluded to, there's the evidence that Blunt is thinking of expanding his range up to that 64th or whatever it was, 64th in Maryland area.
What's most telling, though, it's really about what the police officer says on the numerous times that apparently this investigation was ongoing at 64th in Maryland when he was stopped. Never was he stopped in the presence of Larry Johnson. Never was he stopped with any drugs. Never was he stopped with any sort of pass outs or weapons. Not at all. And in fact, what Mr. Blunt testified to is that my mom lives one block away from that corner, and that's where I live. And Judge Gottschall said that incident that was going on in your home is not relevant to this other conspiracy. But instead, the question becomes here is whether or not the government can simply say, come in and proffer, and if at the time you proffer, we essentially change our theory of why you're lying. We change what we believe that you're not testifying correctly about. And the concern really becomes is what the focus now shifts to, is that material and is it relevant to the same common scheme? There's no debate or no contest whether it was complete. Did he tell you everything he's ever done with Young Money? But Young Money was never even alleged to be part of the conspiracy that was charged in this case or any drug dealing at all. The question becomes whether or not this particular failed to be complete was such to change the nature of what the sentencing guidelines provides for a safety valve. And in this case, we believe that it did, because in those other comparable cases where Mr. Blunt's same involvement was, those individuals were receiving 87 and 93 months because they essentially could cooperate and had provided. And in this particular case, the judge indicated, well, because you're not being allowed the safety valve, the low end is 120. So what you have here is almost a four-year swing with respect to Mr. Blunt's possible sentence. And in that regard, Your Honor, we believe that the way the guidelines work out is that once the government have you come in and proffer and they provide the discovery, and essentially you come in and tell them not only what you did, but you point out to the government where their information is inaccurate and incomplete.
But you lied. When you come into the government, you know, we all know that so many of the cases would not be made except for, you know, 1,001, what is it?
1,001 violations, yeah.
You know, where there's a lie.
Yeah.
1,001, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what catches all of these people.
But in Espinoza, this court indicated that, no, it wasn't just the fact that there was an untruth spoken. It had to be material, and it had to be related to the offense of conduct. And in that case, there is simply no evidence that the issues that the government focused on here was, in fact, that. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Bruner?
May it please the court. The district court correctly found defendant to be ineligible for the safety valve sentencing because, as Justice Rovner has pointed out, Judge Rovner has pointed out, the defendant lied about his knowledge of issues that were particularly relevant and went to the heart of the charged conspiracy.
Is it clear that the charged conspiracy extended all the way up to 64th Street and slipped over to the other side of Cottage Grove and down? I mean, what was the geographic scope?
Your Honor, the charged conspiracy talks about how that beginning in no later than May of 2006 until in about September of 2007 in Chicago, in the Northern District of Illinois. There is talk about 79th Street, but there is also talk about the defendants working with Aukie Williams. Aukie Williams was the leader of this conspiracy, and Aukie Williams was employing Larry Johnson in the beginning of 2007, from January of 2007 up until about April of 2007. The defendant and Tavares Williams were working directly under Larry Johnson in that area to sell narcotics on behalf of Aukie Williams. At some point, there was a disagreement, a falling out, and defendant then went and started working directly for Aukie Williams in the area, in the area of 79th and Cottage Grove. So for the defendant to come in and say that I did not know that Larry Johnson was a drug dealer, or that I was not aware that drug dealing was occurring in 65th and Maryland, is incredulous.
Well,
because
hold on a second,
yes,
about that, because not to put too fine a point on it, but, you know, as lawyers, we know that distributing includes both selling and handing out free samples.
Correct.
Okay, we know that. But he says he did not sell at 65th and Maryland. Is that really untruthful? He may have distributed, but did he sell? Where's the evidence that he sold drugs in that vicinity? Well, you know, could he have thought, you know, in a sort of Clinton-esque way, that he was telling the truth because he's giving away drugs for free?
Your Honor, I think that the defendant had an obligation, if he wanted to benefit from the safety valve sentencing, to come in and tell everything about his involvement, whether it was selling or whether it was handing out. Handing out drugs free of charge to people in order to establish a market certainly goes to the conspiracy in trying to expand that market. And if the defendant wanted to really be truthful, he could have come in and said, well, we weren't technically selling, but we were handing out drugs in an attempt to, at some future time, sell narcotics there.
So you're drawing a distinction, then, between the kind of standard we would apply if this were a perjury charge, in which case, you know, we try to be very careful about a possibility of a Clinton-esque reply versus what the expectations are under the safety valve.
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's correct. The defendant had a duty to come in and be truthful, and he was not truthful. And because he was not truthful, the district court made a finding that he was ineligible for the safety valve, and that finding is subject to clear error. The defendant has not brought up any indication as to how the court created error in this case. She made specific findings as to what she felt to be untruthful.
But, you know, I guess his point actually is that the drug business, if you will, is a highly territorial business. And just because the Aukie Williams conspiracy is focused on 79th and Cottage Grove doesn't tell us a thing about who's got, as it were, rights over 64th and Maryland, you know, 14 blocks up or 15 blocks up and a block over, and I might add about four blocks away from the University of Chicago Law School. But it's – so I think that's where this idea that they really aren't the same course of conduct or scheme comes from.
Well, I would argue, Your Honor, that it is part of the same course of conduct, because – keep in mind, when the defendant first became involved in this scheme through selling the drugs that was provided by Aukey Williams, he was in the area of 65th and Maryland. And so Aukey Williams was providing narcotics to that area in addition to the areas within 79th and Cottage Grove. And so, in fact, the defendant and Tavares Williams said to Aukey Williams that the reason why we want to go back to 65th and Maryland is because there's police activity at 79th Street. We're afraid that we're going to get caught. Let's go to 65th and Maryland, where we know Larry Johnson is there. Larry Johnson didn't take too kindly to that and shot at them. So the fact of the matter is that this is a continuing course of conduct, whereas in Espinoza, you had facts that were totally unrelated to the charge defense, facts that were separated in time, facts that were separated by participants, where in this case we're dealing with the same participants, the same general area, and the same conspiracy. With that, we would ask that the district court uphold the defendant's sentence and affirm the district court's ruling in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have 1 minute.
I'd just like to make one point with respect to the Aukey Williams. Judge Gatto found that the safety valve did not apply, not because she believed Aukey Williams. It wasn't an issue of whether or not his testimony was believable or not, and that somehow Mr. Blunt's testimony was contradictory. The only evidence that she thought that was credible was the police officer who alleged that somehow Mr. Blunt and Larry Johnson had been dealing drugs on 65th in Maryland at some time outside of the conspiracy, notwithstanding that all of the evidence that was presented to the court, all of the discovery that was provided to the defendant, all of the facts of the underlying investigation had absolutely no evidence that there was any drugs there other than simply the government's assertion, and this police officer, who was not part of the task force, who was not part of the investigation, and had not even clarified the time period in which that drug dealing had occurred. But that was the basis of her denying. And in that case, we believe that that's clear error, because that was not where there was any dispute whatsoever with respect to credible evidence. We would ask that you would grant. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.